My name is Judy Madison,
and we're here to talk tonight about the emotions of divorce. I want to tell you, I expected to have four or six people here. Would have been very happy to meet in a chalet, and it just kind of blows me away that there's this number of people. And my plan for the evening was to be talking together more about this rather than my trying to inform people. I have a bias in that respect. You know, I write a lot and have written a lot of books. And now that I just have passed through divorce myself, well, I'm not through it, of course. It takes a long time. But people ask, why are you going to write a book about it? And I'll tell you, I more than any of the other experiences that I've had, it seems to me I couldn't do that because it seems to be such an individual experience. But maybe I'm going to be proven wrong in time. Because now as I'm finding I talk with more people, the emotion side of it, which is what Charlie decided to name this, and I think that was a good choice, the emotion side of it may be similar, even though the experiences may differ quite a bit. So we're going to focus on that angle tonight. Some of you have never been divorced, I'm sure, and some of you have. I would think that it's best if the people who share are people who've been there or who are in the process of thinking through that kind of thing or have perhaps had a real serious bout with that kind of decision. To spark some of our thinking, or more likely to spark some of our feelings, I'll share some of the things I've written in the past related to divorce. And you can then offer whatever you like. I met a friend who led some classes at our church, and it was about 3 years ago that she came, 2 years ago in the spring that she came out and talked to us about some of the knowledge we have about divorce, some of the information we have, and about her own experience. And I did remember at the time that she said it's sort of a two-year process for many people. That is, as you begin to think seriously about this option of change in your life, it usually takes you a couple of years to work through whether this is what you're going to end up doing, in whatever way you do that. I, of course, have a bias of thinking that one ought to be in good counseling as much of that time as possible, preferably both people, but certainly the person like yourself who is involved and thinking about that so that you can get some good guidance along the way. Because of all the things, I think it's very confusing. And emotions are very mixed up. One gets, there are all kinds of things. There's the breaking of a pledge part of it. So then that leads you to some guilt and some wondering if that's right. You have that thing to deal with. There's all of the emotional strain of watching a relationship be upset, the terrific frustration of not being able to communicate, usually. For many people, there's a ton of anger, either because they haven't been able to express some of that anger early enough or appropriately enough, and it's saved up to the point where you can't deal with it appropriately, or else I found that it was easy to use anger as justification for the choice. John and I caught ourselves doing that even sort of after we had made the decision. We were at least close to that decision. And then we began to pick at each other a lot. And I began to think, we're not doing this. This is not what this divorce is about. This irritableness and so on. But it sort of seemed like if you could be really mad at each other, then that would justify to the rest of the world that we simply can't live together anymore. And that would make it seem a little easier. Well, we talked about that. We had some of our best discussions over all our divorce areas. So we talked about that and decided not to do that for the sake of the children and for no one else. Besides, it was so hard for us. It didn't fit. I'm rambling on a bit too much. At any rate, there are a lot of confused feelings, and it's an up-and-down kind of process. And we do tend to isolate ourselves, which, is, of course, anytime we're in trouble, that's what we sort of tend to do, and it's our biggest mistake always, to try to do those things alone. Our theology's all wet when we do that. In a book for teenagers, I wrote about divorce from what I thought might be one teenager's point of view. In fact, I had a teenager in mind from Robbinsdale who I'd known many years ago. My friend is so hostile, so angry and bitter. His parents got a divorce. They always fought or seethed with resentment and made everyone unhappy. He told me how scary it was. I thought he'd feel relieved when they broke up, but he's upset. He isn't happy either way. I heard once that kids sometimes feel guilty or responsible when their parents separate. Maybe he feels responsible. Maybe he just feels lost, insecure, divided by their differences, torn in his loyalties. Divorce is hard for everyone. Parents don't like it either. Kids can get hurt. I guess he needs my friendship. That whole issue of children was absolutely predominant for us. And the hardest process of all to make the decision about whether or not this was the right thing to do in their behalf. And maybe you never know the answer to that. I don't think there are any rules. It's true that one of my sons, I was glad to say, they're out of the village tonight, so I can tell you that. One was very angry right away, which I was kind of relieved about. It was appropriate for him to be angry because he didn't see it coming, either one of them. And the other, though, kind of ran out into the yard and was by himself for a while, and then when he came back, he suggested that maybe he and Ted ought to move out so that we could work it out, taking responsibility for the problem. So that's a very real, painful part of it. For those of you who are working on relationships, in the book Prayers from a Mother's Heart, we have some thoughts about will I still know my husband, which pictures the mother as the buffer and becoming the go-between and then losing her relationship with the man she's married to, or one that I think fits for many of us. I haven't talked to my husband for days. We rush through breakfast, flurry through our separate days, run to meetings at church or school, listen to children chattering, fall into bed exhausted, get up and start the whole busy routine all over again. Lord, I need to talk to my husband. We need to share our feelings. We need to be together, even silently together. How is it that our world becomes so hectic, so scheduled with activity, that we have no time left for the most enduring relationships of life? That isn't the whole thing. The prospect of separation, and I'm not talking about legal separation, but that whole prospect of loss probably can't be anticipated in the extent that it happens to a person. Some of it depends on what you're losing, but I think that even if it's been a very painful togetherness, there is still a sense, tremendous sense of loss. You lose so much that's familiar, so much that you took for granted. And so that when you open the door, and that would be true of someone who has lost someone in death, you open up the door, there is a difference. You're the one who's opening it. Maybe you never used to do that. And the house is more quiet, perhaps. Or a particular closet is empty. All those kinds of things stay with you. And that's part of the pain of separation at the beginning, especially. There's a certain release and relief, as certainly was for me, in some of those changes. But it does not... I guess one friend looked at me across from dinner one night and she said, "My goodness, Judy, for 20 years you've lived a particular way. To change that, of course you feel that." Of course we do. I never liked separation. Even in the unpleasant situations, leaving always feels like loss. Peter knew his whole body and spirit must have wept to see you leaving, dying. It's not easy separating. We need other people. We miss their presence, if not their affirmation. What does it teach me, Lord? That change may not be comfortable, but it need not destroy. New friends emerge, or familiar relationships are enriched. More dear as we comfort each other. We learn that death or leaving can be less a loss, more a gain, if we recognize that each new path, like winter, can lead to new growth, rebirth, resurrection. It's that rebirth and resurrection that's always so painful. I don't think tulips have an easy job in the spring. It just looks that way. And then finally, just to start us off, divorce divides, but it only separates two: friends, family, memories, and yesterdays remain, somehow disjointed, severed, yet tied. It is a difficult resolve, divorce. Sometimes you drive down the road and you're crying. Like I did last May, saying to myself, I can't stand another change in my life. I was so sick of change. And sometimes you feel real capable, real good about yourself, in a new place, trying a new thing. Now I open it to you to share, if you wish, or to ask questions if that's...
I'll say something. My divorce was final in November of 78 and went on for about a year.
Speak nice and loud.
And I think that I experienced really the gamut of emotions. And in talking with particularly women, I found that many of those weren't unusual. And I share that just in case anybody's going through some of this that may think, you know, oh my gosh, what's happened to my Christianity? In fact, that was one of the comments of my ex-husband to my daughter at one point. He said to her over the phone, does your mother still go to church? Because the anger, I guess, for me, there were times when I would talk to him, I was really angry at him. I hit the walls and... you know, every four-letter word that was ever invented, I became familiar with them for a while. I was just so angry. And then I found that I had to have, in order to stop loving him, I had to have a little well-placed hate for a while. Couldn't go on forever. Can't be hateful and bitter forever. But I think in order to begin to get well, at least for me, there was that point of, you know, I would have spit in his eye and kicked his shins if he had come close to me for a while. And maybe for me that was one of the things that I had to experience in order to, you know, to get over the point. He left and there was somebody else. And it was really hard. The rejection and all of that kind of thing. Just, you know, if it's a mutual decision, maybe some of that's not there.
Mm-hmm. But I wondered, in order to stop loving him, when I heard that, I wondered where that came from. I understand better.
I think you have to really also deal with all of those emotions. You can't stuff them inside of you. You have to get them out. You know, it's just about 4 years ago, about tomorrow, that my former husband decided that was it. That you know, we had tried some things, and he decided it was easier to get a divorce than it was to stay married. And so off he went. And again, there was another woman involved. And I went to a support group then, that was like around December, and I sat and I just cried. I just cried. The tears just flowed and flowed. And they'd say something to me, and I'd just cry. And finally they said, you know, they put a pillow on my lap and they said, this is him. You know, just tell him what you think. And I took that pillow and I beat it, you know. And I mean, you know, I wouldn't have beat him. But boy, it was a good thing to do to that pillow, you know. And they said, do that. That's fine. That's great. Get that anger out. Because they said that's what I had in me. And I just, you know, that wasn't a thing that I had ever done, was to be angry like that, you know. And so I beat the pillow, and that helped, you know. And then from that time on, it kind of worked. And I think the thing that really was the best for me, the turnaround, was mm-hmm. that I went to... through an experience called Beginning Experiences. And it's a BE weekend is what they call it. And it's put on by the same people that do Marriage Encounter. And that's for marriages going this way. and it's a closure type of a thing, whether you're going through a divorce or a death. any kind of place where you need to have a closure. And it's like shutting the door. There's a window in the door, but you don't have to open it up and go back again. You can see those good times. And I think we will all admit, those of us that have been in any kind of relationship, there's good and there's bad, you know. And those good times you want to remember. And so it was really neat for me to go through that. And I worked a lot of frustration and emotion out over that weekend. We ate like we eat at Holden, in fact, more so. And we'd eat every 3-4 hours. We haven't done anything but sit here, but that emotional strain really eats up the calories. And that was good. And I think from that time, you know, I went up, and then I still have hills and valleys. And, you know, it's been 4 years, but there are things that trigger. And Amy and I talked about that the other day. You know, various things trigger things, and I think this right here will trigger something for me. And I don't go as deep and I don't go as high afterward, but I still have hills and valleys.
I too was in the same situation as these two ladies. Pounding a pillow didn't work for me because I'm just not any kind of a person that can do that. But I wrote and wrote and wrote reams of stuff at night and during the day. And then I'd rewrite it. And I'd go over it and cross things out, and about 6 or 8 things kept coming up, you know, kept reappearing on this paper. And I ended up making that into a letter, and I sent it. And that was real good. I mean, the counselor that I counseled with said, you write it down, and that might be enough, but you might have to send it. And I did. And the other thing she was talking about is memories. You know, you've got memories, and you've got wedding pictures, and you've got stuff. But and you did have a big wedding, you know, and the dress and the whole thing. But there's really nobody to recall that with. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your friends really would rather not. You know, if you get into a conversation about your wedding or your honeymoon, you really hesitate. And I'm remarried, happily remarried. I've discussed that a little bit with my second husband, but that is obviously nothing. You know, I discuss at length with him. But even with your original friends, you know,
painful for them.
I'm sure.
Painful for them, I think. I do find that you get such different responses from people. Now, both John and I, being in the church, wondered how that would be. Both our churches have been very supportive, very understanding. And he received a call the same week he was separated and moved out of the house. And so I thought that spoke very well for the church, to see us as human beings and accept us. But people react differently, friends react differently, according, I think, to where they're at that moment, which could change the next week, too. And for some who know that they could never go through it, it's real hard to hear that you are going through it. And for others who have had ups and downs, a lot of times they can be more accepting. But you have to kind of, you can't prescribe how it's going to turn out because you don't know which ones are which.
Mm-hmm. I've not been divorced and don't know that I'm planning on one. But I'm a pastor in a Lutheran church and have been involved with a lot of divorce situations. And I'm wondering what experiences people have had in congregations where both persons have elected to stay in the same congregation. We have in our congregation currently a couple of situations like that. And what are the kinds of things that as a Christian community we could do to deal with the dynamics and emotions involved?
I can speak to that a little bit because a very good friend of mine is divorced and remarried, and her ex-husband is still a member of our church. And oftentimes when he comes to church with the daughter leads to the pew they always sat in, and mom and first husband are in that pew, or the one ahead, you know, and are right there. And, you know, it's been hard for them, but they've worked it out. I guess one of the really hard things is for the rest of us. Many of our friends are real bitter, are real angry with them. It upset their equilibrium to have these two people who've been married 25 years get divorced. So Some people said, you know, we were friends before, we'll go on being friends. I happened to not be, I was an acquaintance, not really a friend. Before, these two people are much nicer now. I like them a lot, both of them. But it's been a real struggle. And I don't know that we, you know, I don't know that it's ever going to work out so that all the people will accept it. But I think as people have gotten to know them as separate people and how much nicer they are to know, they're learning.
I couldn't do that. I wouldn't want to do that.
You wouldn't want to stay in the same church?
No. There are some things that John and I have had to do that are in the same setting. Here we are in the same profession and all that stuff. And I find it very difficult. Not out of bitterness and all of that kind of thing, but because I can't keep straight who I am. Which person am I? That old person or this new person? And I get tired. Real tired.
I think that's a real big point. My ex-husband wasn't a real strong churchgoer, but the congregation was everything a congregation should be. I mean, they were excellent. They upheld me just so much. But I have come to recognize that in many ways he did me the biggest favor he ever could have done was when he left and went to Hawaii. Because we couldn't, you know, get on the phone and harangue and harass each other all the time. And there was a real big physical separation for quite a while that way.
I need to start over.
Yeah, and I think that would be the hardest thing in the world, just to have to face that person time after time. And that, I see that in friends, that if they just have to come up against each other all the time,
and for the sake of children, you very often do.
Yeah.
And then we have, for John and I, we just have to keep our focus on the kids at that point. This is for them. They have a mom and they have a dad and they need them both. And you do what you can for their sake and overlook some things for yourself.
Don't you think that in a case of infidelity, probably the person who has been unfaithful just leaves the church?
Maybe so.
And then sort of everybody can just surround the person. And
but it's not that simple.
I mean, not everybody just runs out and says, "Now this is what I've done."
Invariably, there's a lot of stuff behind that infidelity, and it's just not that simple.
Right.
And I struggle with what kinds of counsel to offer to people. We have a family, young couple, a model couple in many ways, three children, and they're divorced now, and we. Children want to stay in the same church, and so the husband will come to one service and the wife the other. But I don't know how long that, you know, that's going to work.
And I can understand your concern, and in a way, it's really their problem.
Yeah, it is.
Because you can't take care of all that either,
yeah.
Or the church either.
One of the best things I saw about 6-8 months ago, for those of you that are in the ALC, the task force did a paper on the church's stand, the church's outlook, or whatever you want to call it, on divorce, marriage and divorce. I thought it was very, very well done. I would recommend this reading. It's kind of a pinkish sheet or salmon colored, as I recall.
You can usually get those kinds of things from your head office.
Our daughter is in the process of going through a divorce, and this is something neither my wife or our families we've ever had before. And we're sort of, you know, what is it that we do? How can we be a support?
I have some ideas, but maybe some of the others can.
I was married right out of school, and we were both very young. We were only married for 3 years, and it was a very difficult time as we struggled and went separate ways and struggled to live up to what we thought were certain roles and models, and everyone thought we had an ideal marriage, which made it even more difficult. There was a lot of pressure there, and when we split up, there was a tremendous sense of failure on our part, and of fear, and for our friends, a sense of well, many of our friends got married at the same time, just out of school, and there was a sense, I think, from them, can this happen to me? For our parents, there was a sense of, well, I remember when my wife first went home and talked to her parents, her father's reaction was, well, he's been beating you. Mm-hmm. Has he been unfaithful? And, you know, what's going on? Well, then why are you leaving? And there are times when you're afraid to talk about it and you don't really want to talk about it. And I think as much as anything, probably the primary thing for me, because there's a real fear of being rejected from friends and from family, was not a push to make things work or find the answer, but just a sense of encouragement and welcome, of acceptance, to feel like we need to be, I'm not sure we were acting as adults at the time, now that I look back on it, we needed to feel like we were responsible. We didn't want people going through the list of things that we ought to have been doing or should be doing. We felt like we were trying to struggle with that anywhere ourselves. And we didn't need to be treated as children. In a way, I wanted my parents to treat me as peers. I knew not they were my friends at that point in time, as much as anything else. And also, for a brief time, that I could go home. When we got married, when I got out of school, there was very much a sense of leaving home and of that being separate and having a separate life. And for a while, I needed to go home. And I was home for just a few months and then needed to start over. And there was a lot of encouragement there for that also. Let's get going. And what are you going to do and where are things going to go? But it's a time when probably more than anything else, you're not sure you believe in yourself. And you need people to believe in you. And not believe you need to be a certain kind of person, but just to believe in you and to be there for you, I think.
I'd like to go back to that subject in a second. I would just add from my experience, John's family was my family also, and we both were fearful of how that would come out. But that sense of being able to go home, they didn't ask us why, we didn't have to prove why or justify our decision, which meant they were treating us as equals and adults, but that both of us were welcome to come for dinner, and they made it a real point to have us over at different times, was so reassuring. It was one of the best things in the whole process.
Together or separately?
Separately. Although at Easter time we were all together. That doesn't always happen. Yeah.
I had a similar situation in dealing with family, and not my parents, because my parents were extremely supportive of the situation and they were very understanding, but I have a very large, secondary family. And the idea of divorce is sort of like, well, failure. And it was really difficult for me to deal with aunts and uncles who had this traditional viewpoint of marriage is till death do you part, no matter what. And so suddenly I was faced with the fact that I had to face them and sort of like the fact that I was going to really get put through the ringer. And so why did you have to, and what went wrong? What did you do wrong? And the hardest part was just to be very frank about it and not get into personalities and say, well, she was unfaithful to me. She was a bad woman. You know, because that wasn't the case. I mean, there are so many factors that are involved with relationships that die. And the hardest thing for me was to say, well, it didn't work, and I'm very sorry, but this is the way it's going to be.